KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
And at 8:01, it's sunny and 79 degrees in Atlantic. We look for skies to be partly to mostly sunny today with a high of 98. Heat advisories are in effect for most of the listing area through 7 a.m. on Saturday, with the exception of the far west and southwest counties, where that goes into effect at 1 o'clock this afternoon and runs through 9 this evening. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News, brought to you by First National Bank, locally owned and proud to be your full-service bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. In the news, while some parts of Iowa have been without rain for more than a week, there are currently no burn bans in place. Dubuque County will be under a burn ban starting Thursday morning in eastern Iowa. The head of the state fire marshal's arson and explosives bureau says it's important with the dry conditions to be especially careful celebrating the 4th of July. Ron Humphrey says things could be worse.
Not quite as bad as it is in the spring or fall when all the crops and fields and everything is completely dried out. At least the crops and some of the grass are still somewhat green, but you got to keep in mind that it is dry and a small fire could spread very quickly if it had the right conditions and the right material.
Humphrey warns that safety should always come first when shooting off fireworks.
Use good safety precautions when using the fireworks. We'll want to make sure that with the dry conditions that you also take that as a precaution to make sure that when and if you're using sparklers or shooting off fireworks with a permit, that the area you're doing it in is safe for people and for the surrounding environment.
The Dubuque County burn ban goes into effect at 8 a.m. Thursday. More counties could be added in the next few days without significant rain to improve the dry conditions. For current burn ban information, look for the link to the State Fire Marshal's division under this same story on our website at kjan.com. News time is 8:03.
First National Bank is locally owned and proud to be your full-service bank. They have the expertise needed to provide you excellent service with a great selection of banking and investment needs. They have a complete line of lending services available, and they offer insurance sales. At First National Bank, you'll be greeted with a friendly face at the teller's window, as well as each special desk. First National Bank in Fontenelle, Greenfield, Messina, and Anita, where you'll get the most banking service for the least cost. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Officials with Ziegler announced on Tuesday that as an approved national FFA scholarship sponsor, it has, in cooperation with AGCO, awarded a $1,000 scholarship to Caitlin Blake, a high school graduate from Walnut, for the 2012-2013 school year. With support from local FFA chapters, the scholarship program was offered through more than 55 Massey Ferguson, Challenger, and Gleaner dealers across the U.S. Ziegler awarded a total of 5 scholarships this year. Scholarship selection takes into consideration FFA involvement, work experience, community service, leadership skills, and academics, and is based on academic records, FFA achievements, leadership, and other school and community activities. Supervised agricultural experience programs and future goals are all considered in the scholarship award. Founded in 1914, Ziegler is a family-owned company headquartered in Minneapolis, Minnesota, employing more than 1,450 people in 23 communities in Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Missouri. A federal grand jury has indicted a Northwest Iowa couple on bank robbery, conspiracy, and firearms charges. 47-year-old Jeffrey Schoon and 40-year-old Roxana Schoon are accused of robbing 4 banks. Jeffrey Schoon pleaded not guilty Tuesday in U.S. District Court in Sioux City. Roxana Schoon is scheduled to be arraigned on July the 12th. The indictment alleges that the Wall Lake, Iowa couple robbed Iowa State Bank in Otobolt on December 29th, the Citizens First National Bank in Early on January 11th, Westside State Bank in Vail on January 28th, and the Heritage Bank in Lytton on March the 23rd. A total of nearly $33,000 was stolen. The indictment says Jeffrey Schoon robbed the bank, and his wife drove the getaway car. A Sioux City man has pleaded not guilty to bludgeoning 2 people in their sleep with a crowbar. 23-year-old James Kroll entered a plea on Monday in Woodbury County District Court. Kroll is charged with first-degree murder, attempted murder, and first-degree burglary. Police say he beat 54-year-old Jeffrey Moravec to death and seriously injured 54-year-old Mary Tope after breaking into Tope's home on June the 13th. Tope remained hospitalized at Mercy Medical Center in Sioux City last week. An updated report on her condition is not available. Police say Tope's daughter, Emily, was in the house at the time and identified Kroll, her former boyfriend. Court papers say Kroll was distraught that his relationship with Emily Tope had come to an end. The Nebraska State Patrol says an Iowa man who crashed his pickup in eastern Nebraska died as a result of the collision and not medical problems. The death of 58-year-old William Curiel was deemed a traffic fatality. The Sioux City man died on June the 18th when his 1998 Chevy pickup went off a county road near Lyons, Nebraska. Patrol spokeswoman Deb Collins said the truck went down an embankment off of 29 Road and hit a creek bank. She said Curiel was not wearing a seatbelt and was pronounced dead at the scene. Collins said Curiel had a history of unspecified medical problems. Investigators waited for the results of an autopsy before releasing details about his death. In other news, a Massachusetts man pedaling his way across the United States on an unusual bicycle made his way through Iowa this past week, spending Monday night in Harlan. Last April, 59-year-old Kevin McNett dipped the rear wheel of his bike in the Atlantic Ocean in Lewis, Delaware.
I'm pedaling a reproduction of an 1885 Victor bicycle, which for someone to look at it, we call them high wheels. It's got the very large 54-inch front wheel and a small rear wheel. And it's a little different than a normal bike.
And it requires a good bit of pedal power, so to speak, to negotiate the hills.
With this bike, it's direct drive with the pedals. So there's only one gear. And that's on my bike, because it's a 54-inch wheel, is about 160-inch. Meaning every time I crank the pedals, I go forward 160 inches. So there's no dropping the gear down when I go up an incline or a hill. It's just one gear.
McNett started the journey with a friend from Maryland pedaling with him and the friend's wife following in a truck. It was an effort to raise money for research to prevent juvenile diabetes. The trio made it all the way to Indiana before the couple dropped off as his fellow cyclist's diabetes made it impossible to continue. McNett pressed on, crossing into Iowa over the Muscatine Bridge on June the 26th. He says he's faced some challenges in Iowa.
Not only finding the right roads and places to stay, But the hills are tough, and of course this beautiful 90 degree in humid weather has been another bone of contention.
McNett pedaled from Jefferson to Harlan on Monday, where he got a room at the Settle Inn in Harlan and answered the question everyone asks, why?
I guess the best way of putting it is, if you have to ask the question, you'll never understand the answer. I don't know why exactly I'm doing it. It's a bit of a challenge. It's a dream of mine. These high-wheel bicycles, there have been a number of people that have cycled across the United States on them. Back in the old days, 1884, Thomas Stevens was the first person to ride a bicycle across the U.S., and he went from San Francisco to Boston.
McNutt has already cycled across the country on a modern bicycle twice.
There's probably less than 25 people that have crossed the United States on a high-wheel bike. So it's a fairly exclusive club, and I'm hoping I can join it.
And he plans on finishing the cross-country journey on September 1st.
I think that's a reasonable guesstimate. So I've got to go all the way across Nebraska. I'm going to go all the way across Wyoming, which means some Rocky Mountains, and then into southern Idaho, and then I want to go all the way across to Oregon to the Pacific coast. We had dipped our small wheel in the Atlantic Ocean, and the whole dream is to stick the big wheel in the Pacific Ocean.
McNett made it into Nebraska on Tuesday, crossing over the Missouri River on a bridge at Blair, Nebraska. Taking a look at our world headlines of this hour, many cities and towns have decided it's too dry to hold fireworks displays today, especially with wildfires in the west, but a huge turnout is expected in Savannah, Georgia, where the colony of Georgia was founded 43 years before America declared its independence. And millions of people plan to attend the New York City's big fireworks show over the Hudson River. 4th of July dinner may have to be grilled outside today for more than a million utility customers from about the Midwest to the Mid-Atlantic who are still without electricity. About 3 million customers initially lost power following last Friday's violent storm, and elected officials want to know why it's taking so long to fix the problems. Also in the news, Italy's premier says his country is not asking for a bailout, but Mario Monti says it's important that borrowing rates drop in Italy because they're eating into the government's savings and demoralizing the public's faith in budget-tightening measures. A group that tracks jihadist chatter on the Internet says a group calling itself the Al-Nusra Front is claiming responsibility for dozens of attacks across Syria, including last week's deadly raid on a pro-government TV station. The militant group said in statements on jihadist websites that the attacks are revenge against President Bashar Assad's regime for killing Syrians. And a group of American war veterans is asking Congress to pass a bill to require Washington to repair and maintain a cemetery in the Philippines, where thousands of American servicemen and their dependents are buried. The cemetery north of Manila has been covered in ash since the gigantic volcanic eruption of Mount Pinatubo in 1991. News time is 8:11.
At First National Bank, we strive to make your banking experience as simple and convenient as possible. If you would like to enjoy the benefit of banking anytime, anywhere, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, without an interruption in your busy day, sign up for our free online banking. Signing up is easy. Just visit our website and click on Enroll to try our online banking demo for a trial run. Locally owned, locally active, and proud to be your bank. In Fontenelle, Greenfield, Messina, Anita, and Correctionville. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
In our funeral announcements, Wayne Abbott, age 90, of New Hampton and formerly of the Greenfield area, died Friday at the Sunrise Cottages in Rochester, Minnesota. Funeral services for Wayne Abbott will be tomorrow at 1 o'clock at the Steen Funeral Home in Greenfield. Larry Gene Wagner, age 73, of Oakland and formerly of the Council Bluffs and Griswold areas, died Monday at the Oakland Manor. Interment of ashes for Larry Wagner will be on Thursday at 4 o'clock at the Oaklawn Cemetery at Oakland. Reconvene Funeral Home in Oakland has arrangements. Gloria Faye Erickson, age 84, of Griswold, died Friday at the Atlantic Nursing and Rehab Center. Memorial services for Gloria Erickson will be a Friday at 11 o'clock at the Faith Lutheran Church in Griswold. Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home in Atlantic has arrangements. Margaret Maxine Nelson, age 98, of Guthrie Center, died Saturday. Graveside services for Margaret Nelson will be held this Saturday at 1 o'clock at the Galva Township Cemetery East. Twig Funeral Home in Guthrie Center has arrangements. Harold Kleinpaste, age 92, of Harlan, died June the 9th at the Elmcrest Retirement Community in Harlan. Funeral services for Harold Kleinpaste will be on July the 10th at 11 a.m. at the First United Methodist Church in Harlan. Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Carol Jean Walker, age 62, of West Des Moines, died Monday at the Cavanaugh Hospice House in Des Moines. A private graveside service for Carol Walker will be held at the Earlham City Cemetery. Johnson Family Funeral Home in Earlham has the arrangements. David Esbeck, age 73, of Des Moines and formerly of Kimbleton, died Sunday at Mercy Hospital in Des Moines. Services for David Esbeck are pending at the Odie Funeral Home in Kimbleton. And Tom Sandhorst, age 54, of Marnie, died Tuesday at his home. Services for Tom Sandhorst are pending at the Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home in Atlantic. The news was brought to you by First National Bank with locations in Fontenelle, Greenfield, Messina, Anita, and Correctionville. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.